It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, there's a 12-year difference in the life expectancy for people in two different zip codes in Milwaukee. We'll find out how poverty impacts people throughout their lives. First, it's time for our weekly look at national politics. This week, a backlash over presidential retweets, a run-up to a contested U.S. Senate seat in Alabama, and a sting operation targeting the Washington Post that backfired. Amanda Turkle is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Huffington Post. She's here to get us up to speed on these stories and more. Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with this attempted sting operation at the Washington Post. This came out yesterday. It gets a little complicated. Can you talk us through the story of Jamie Phillips, who came to the Washington Post with claiming she had allegations against Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore?
Sure. Well, I mean, the Washington Post obviously published its big explosive story saying that there were women who accused Roy Moore of pursuing them when they were teenagers and he was an adult. And the Moore campaign has really gone after these allegations, basically saying they're fake news. It's part of this liberal media crusade to get him. And there's been this attempt that it seemed on the right to sort of disprove the allegations and to show that it's fake news, basically. And so we saw the behind the scenes of this when Project Veritas, which is run by James O'Keefe, who's known for doctoring videos and running these conservative stings, tried to do this to the Washington Post. He sent one of his operatives, a woman named Jamie Phillips, to go to the Washington Post, claim that Roy Moore impregnated her and tried to get her to have an abortion when she was younger, to try to get the Washington Post to publish this fake news, to basically show the Washington Post was publishing any dirt, even if it wasn't true. And it backfired. The Washington Post caught this woman. You know, it basically showed that the Washington Post, they have very good reporters there. They do their homework. And it made James O'Keefe and his operative look ridiculous, honestly.
And yeah, videos have come out. The Washington Post had secret videos of a reporter talking to Jamie Phillips, who was presumably secretly trying to video the reporter in question. And a lot of this showed a behind-the-scenes look at how people do journalism, trying to confirm stories that show up on their doorstep.
Exactly. This Jamie Phillips person came to them. She said she wanted to talk to them, and so they did some research on her. And one of their researchers at the Washington Post noticed that a woman who appeared to be the same woman had put up one of those GoFundMe pages saying, "Hey, I'm moving to New York to pursue my dream, to work, to expose the lies of the mainstream media." And this obviously raised some red flags for the people at the Washington Post. And so the reporter confronted Jamie about this and said, "You know, you don't seem to be who you say you are. Can you explain this to us?" And she had an excuse that she was going to work for the Daily Caller, which is a conservative publication, but it fell through. The Daily Caller said that they had never heard of someone by that name. There was no job offer ever for her. And her story just fell apart. But again, it showed that the Washington Post does its homework. They have very good journalists, and this conservative smear machine is trying to do what it can to undermine the mainstream media.
Is there any fallout here for Project Veritas, the group behind this? They've gotten funding from some donors, including just before his presidential campaign, I understand Donald Trump himself had made a donation.
Well, Donald Trump has shown, as I think we'll probably talk about more on this show, he does not really work to verify the news before he promotes it. So I don't think that this will necessarily change Donald Trump's view of the group's work. But, I mean, James O'Keefe has been discredited for a while. He is well known for doctoring videos and putting out things that portray his enemies in the worst light, whether or not it's true. So people have not been taking them seriously for quite a while, but I think this, in many ways, is the most damaging thing to him that's ever happened. But I think by now, everyone in the media knows to be incredibly skeptical of anything he claims or does. I mean, even after this, the Washington Post sent reporters up to O'Keefe's office to confront him about why he did this. And they had an exchange where they asked James O'Keefe some questions. He ignored them. And then he tried to ask the Washington Post reporter some questions. O'Keefe put out a video of this. Of course, he doctored it and edited it so that all of the Washington Post questions were not there, just making it look like they were running away from him. So it's typical of what he does.
We're talking to Amanda Turkle from the Huffington Post. She's the Washington bureau chief there, looking at some of the top news stories in national politics this week. Well, related back to that Roy Moore story, there is, of course, this Senate race in Alabama, the biggest election going on in a non-usual election time that's coming up in a couple of weeks. And you wrote recently about national Democrats and their support for Doug Jones, the Democratic candidate in Alabama, and kind of a hands-off strategy. What's going on?
Well, Alabama is obviously a tough place for a Democrat to win statewide. And I think most Democrats thought that they had no chance at this race until Roy Moore, who was very controversial, was named the GOP nominee. And so the question is, how do they help Democrat Doug Jones win there? He's a strong candidate. He is best known for being a U.S. attorney who prosecuted the KKK for bombing a black church, and he put the KKK members behind bars. So, you know, what should Democrats do? Give money, send people down there to campaign? And there are a lot of Democrats who are frustrated, saying it seems like the National Party isn't doing enough. They haven't sent him money. They haven't run ads. But I talked to Democrats down in Alabama who said that basically Jones is getting a lot of money. He has more money than Roy Moore does. And that the worst thing Democrats could do is have the National Party come in and run ads or do a big show of force, because frankly, Alabama voters don't really like National Democrats. And so Doug Jones is doing what he can to distance himself from National Democrats like, you know, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, and try to make it about local issues, state issues, and say, I'm different than the National Party. So basically, they need to be behind the scenes helping him with what he needs, but they can't be out there publicly giving him money and running ads.
Is this a general story for places where that national brand might not be big, whether that's a Democrat running in a Republican state or maybe a Republican running in a traditionally Democratic state?
Absolutely. I think you'll see a lot of Republicans running in districts where Donald Trump is not that popular, trying to distance themselves from Trump and say, look, you know, Trump's not my guy. Mitch McConnell, maybe not my guy either. I am focused more on local issues, and the current Republican Party is not what I like. I mean, Democrats have learned, on the Democratic side, they've really learned their lesson. You had the Georgia 6th Congressional District, where you had John Ossoff, who was sort of this national Democratic phenomenon, run against Karen Handel, who was a Republican. And national Democrats were excited about this race. It's a traditionally Republican seat. It was to replace Tom Price, who was a congressman there but became Health and Human Services Secretary. So it was a special election. Democrats said, we can get this seat. But ultimately, the National Party came in, and the Republicans in the district didn't like it, and it got too much attention, and Republicans ended up winning. And so that's what they don't want happening in Alabama.
We're talking to Amanda Turkle, Washington bureau chief for the Huffington Post, about the top political stories of the week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you follow this sting targeting the Washington Post? What is your reaction to that story? Do you have thoughts on the biggest game in town as far as elections go right now, this Alabama Senate seat, Roy Moore, Doug Jones? What do you think of those candidates, how the national parties are in their own ways, in many ways, distancing themselves from those candidates? Coming up, we'll talk about the president, President Trump, referring again to Senator Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas at a ceremony honoring Native American veterans, the Navajo Code Talkers. We'll talk about those issues. You can share your thoughts now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our look at the top stories in national politics now with Amanda Turkle, Washington bureau chief for the Huffington Post. You can join in at 800-642-1234. President Trump getting a lot of reaction for, again, referring to Senator Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas during a ceremony honoring Navajo Code Talkers, veterans from World War II, and retweets of three anti-Islamic videos from the far-right group Britain First. Your reaction to that? Also, the story about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the argument over who gets to be the boss there. You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to your calls now. George is with us in Beaver Dam. George, hi.
Hi, Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you think?
I identify myself as kind of a moderate Republican, maybe a little bit Democrat. But anyways, the whole thing about this sting operation about Roy Moore just kind of bothers me. Isn't there some kind of crime these guys can be charged with for trying to, manipulate the media and everything else? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
George, thanks for the call. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. No money changed hands here, so I don't know if it's fraud or anything like that. Amanda, have you seen any talk of potential charges related to that?
I haven't in this one. I mean, James O'Keefe has faced charges in the past because he's broken in places, for example. But for this one so far, I haven't heard of that. It's more just sort of, I think, more of an embarrassment on what he was doing. But yes, charges against James O'Keefe on other things have been around. And, he is known for being not only unethical, but I think perhaps like crossing the line. So it'll be interesting to see if anything does come of that.
Thanks a lot for that call, George. Let's turn to a couple of controversial incidents from the president this week. At a ceremony yesterday honoring Navajo code talkers, World War II veterans, President Trump made a remark aimed at Senator Elizabeth Warren. Here's a listen.
You're very, very special people. You were here long before any of us were here. Although we have a representative in Congress who they say was here a long time ago. They call her Pocahontas. But you know what? I like you because you are special.
The backstory there, referring to Senator Warren as Pocahontas, can you talk about the backstory there?
Sure. It relates to Warren's claim that she is of Native American ancestry. And, a lot of people raised questions about that. Warren said she couldn't necessarily prove it, but that was what was said in her family. And Donald Trump has found this absolutely hilarious and has nicknamed her Pocahontas and continues to call her that, even though many people pointed out that it's very offensive and it's racist. It was especially bad that he did it at a ceremony honoring Native American veterans to bring up this racial slur, something that didn't have to do at all with the bravery of these men. And it was also terrible, as many people pointed out, that the White House didn't see why it was bad that they did this event right in front of a portrait of Andrew Jackson, who was known as president for the forced removal of Native Americans and, known for sort of decimating the Native American population in this country. So it was pretty bad and offensive all around.
And here's the president of the Navajo Nation, Russell Begay, talking about this on MSNBC yesterday.
This is where we're honoring and respecting our veterans, especially our code talkers, and to put in a slur that has become racial, Pocahontas, didn't belong there. It was inappropriate, was not a time to do it, was not a place to do it. This was a time to lift up the veterans, especially the code talkers, and the contribution to this nation.
Let's bring on a caller on this now. We've got Charlie just dropped off the line in Milwaukee. I guess we won't go to him, but we'll talk to you again sometime. Charlie, I want to move on to another issue. We're going to get into this ceremony a little more tomorrow at 4:30. President Trump retweeted three videos from the account of Jada France and a leader of the group Britain First, variously described as far white, far right or white nationalist in Great Britain. Can you tell us what was in these videos he retweeted?
Sure. They were basically what he said they showed was Muslims committing acts of violence. And the videos had titles like Muslim migrant beats up Dutch boy on crutches, Muslim destroys a statue of Virgin Mary, and Islamist mob pushes teenage boy off roof and beats him to death. But, Trump had no idea if these videos were true, if they showed what he said they were. For example, one of the videos did not show a Muslim migrant at all, but it showed a teenage boy who was born in the Netherlands. There were incidents in Syria and Egypt without explaining the context of what was going on then. One happened, for example, in 2013, shortly after the military overthrew the country's first elected president. There was protests and violence there. It's not just random Muslim people beating up and committing violence, other, you know, committing violence against other people. And the White House press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, was questioned about these videos. And she admitted that she didn't know if they were true, but she said that didn't matter because this sort of thing is happening. And that was Trump's point. And that's incredibly irresponsible. And she said the threat is real. The threat needs to be addressed. The threat has to be talked about. But she admitted that they didn't know if those videos themselves were real. I mean, that's like saying that putting up, I don't know, videos of some imaginary creature and saying, we don't know if they're real. But these pictures are real. But we you know, the threat's out there. So, you know, it was very racist. You know, the person who shared these videos, the leader of Britain First, Franson, has actually committed violence against Muslims. So this is, you know, it was sort of a low point, I think, for many people in Trump's tweets.
Let's go to a caller on this. Michelle is with us in Green Bay. Michelle, hi.
Yeah, hi. These videos are just appalling. I saw them when I first woke up. I'm a middle school teacher. I have Muslim students in my class. We spent time talking about this. The students are affected. This is a geopolitical issue, but it's also an issue for Americans and for children who are being raised in the Muslim faith in our communities. And it's just beyond belief what I see now compared to what I saw a couple of years ago, and how it's affecting people's lives. And I just don't even have words for it.
Michelle, thanks for the call. And there's been a lot of reaction, including from the office of the prime minister in England, saying Britain First, the group that had posted the video, seeks to divide communities in their use of hateful narratives. Went on to say it is wrong for the president to have done this. What's been the reaction like, Amanda?
I mean, the reaction has been incredibly negative. Obviously, there are members of Trump's base who, you know, believe these videos and think they're fine, which is part of why it's troubling that the president of the United States shares them. But, you know, as the caller mentioned, there are a lot of people out there who are Muslim or who maybe aren't Muslim, but who maybe have brown skin. And to see the president share videos like this that are old, that are unsubstantiated, that basically just show brown people being violent. And it sends a message to a lot of people that it basically sends a racist message to a lot of people out there who aren't white. And I think that's part of what was so upsetting. I mean, there was also national security experts who said that if you are trying to create anti-American hostility and create more unrest in the Middle East, what Trump is doing is a great way of doing that, because he's basically just painting all Muslims with a broad brush and saying they're all violent and, you know, America is against you. And that's what a lot of leaders have tried not to do, you know, have tried to say that, look, there's nothing wrong with the Muslim faith. There are extremists, as there are in every religion, but we have nothing against the Muslim faith. And Trump does not seem to be, you know, making that distinction.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about national politics with Amanda Turkle from the Huffington Post. Bringing a call on the Code Talkers ceremony issue now. Paul is with us in Menominee Falls. Paul, hi.
Hi, great program. Thanks for taking my call. I think what your guest is saying, the word that she used, is troubling. I think as a Marine Corps veteran, I think that vets and Indian leaders need to call upon the president to apologize. I think where he missed the boat was that we respect and honor their Indian heritage, but they were there as Marines who had put their lives and safety on the line to protect and to save others' lives. And he had a wonderful opportunity in front of them to draw attention to what they have done and to honor their service. And that's been totally missed. And these men, these brave men, if you look at the ribbons on their chest, these are quite decorated men. There aren't many of them left. And so I was actually quite saddened to see all of this kind of play out. And I'm quite disappointed in Paul Ryan and the Republican leadership for not having stepped up and said, you know, the president needs to apologize. No one has asked him to apologize. I mean, and I'm not going to go on and on about, you know, what he has said and done to women, which that's a whole nother subject. But, I mean, we need to call upon him to say, it's time for you to issue an apology to these men.
Paul, thanks for the call. I want to jump in and give our guest a chance to respond. Have there been calls from fellow Republicans on this, Amanda?
Well, Paul Ryan does not usually call out Donald Trump as forcefully as many people, including within the Republican Party, would like him to. Senator John McCain, who's obviously a veteran and a war hero, did say, he said that politicizing these genuine American heroes is an insult to their sacrifice. And I mean, Trump, you know, to get to your caller's point, Trump, when it comes to veterans, likes to say that he cares about veterans, he cares about the military more than everyone else. But, you know, he has done many things that other presidents wouldn't even dream of, you know, going after John McCain during the campaign and saying that he's not a hero because he was captured as a prisoner of war, and that, you know, Donald Trump likes people who weren't captured. I mean, he didn't even serve in the military. You know, going after Khazir Khan, the Gold Star father whose son died while serving the country, and attacking him and attacking his Muslim faith. So, you know, I don't think we will see Trump apologize. I think this is, you know, sort of what he does.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Amanda, the big push on Capitol Hill is for the tax overhaul plan. Do these kind of comments and retweets and whatnot distract from that big policy issue?
Oh, absolutely. Republicans on Capitol Hill do not enjoy all of this. They don't enjoy when reporters go up to Capitol Hill and ask them if they can respond to Trump's latest tweet. They'd much rather be talking about taxes. Yes, the tax fight is still going on, and right now it looks like Republican senators are on their way to passing it. And I think a lot of Republicans wish Trump perhaps had done a little bit more, as presidents have in the past. You know, they are out there with the bully pulpit. He could be convincing reluctant senators to sign on by promising them certain things. And so far, Trump hasn't really played that role quite as much as past presidents.
Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Amanda Turkel. She's the Washington bureau chief for the Huffington Post. She joined us for a weekly roundup of national politics.